Lots of Alaskans make their living catching them for cash. Others make their living catching them to smoke, dry, freeze, put in jars, or barter for other necessities. We're talking about salmon, why it's so important and so wildly popular with Alaskans and others outside of our state. The much ballyhooed first flight of Copper River Reds will arrive in Seattle next week, where chefs and consumers are eagerly waiting and will gratefully pay top dollar for a few delicious fillets. We're discussing the story of salmon today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaskans and Alaska's communities and in operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
The weeks are counting down until the first salmon return home to Alaska rivers and streams. Alaska's people live lives that are deeply connected to salmon. Alaska's economy and families are fueled by these relationships. Learn more about Alaska's salmon at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. From millions of dollars made from their bright red flesh to dollars made from fish skin shoes, Alaskans have a love affair with these beautiful icons of the ocean. A new collection of stories by Alaskans writing about their salmon passion brings together memories, recipes, tales of the ones that got away, and stories of family bonds made stronger through the satisfaction brought by putting up fish for winter. I have one of hopefully two guests that we'll have at some point today.
Willie Hensley, if you're listening.
Get here now.
Yeah.
Two of the writers were invited to join us today, and one of them is here. Julia O'Malley is a lifelong Alaskan.
Almost.
Almost. Yeah. Almost yeah. A lifelong Alaskan. Yeah, I guess you haven't lived your whole life yet, have you?
Yeah.
And contributed to this collection of stories called Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. And I'm going to hold that up for the camera so that people watching in television land later on can
Whoa,
see it.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. So if you would like to join our conversation, we're talking about salmon and why it's such an important part of the Alaska experience, the Alaska life, and has been for many, many, many generations. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or if you're in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org, if you want to send your story about the big fish that got away.
I wanted to put a question out to the listening audience as well, which is just how should one cook salmon on the grill? Like, what is the way?
I thought in your story, your method, you know, in the title of your story was The Right Kind of Hungry. I think that's what it was,
yep,
wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure. We can look it up.
Let's look
no,
it up.
No, it is The Right Kind of Hungry. I remember
and
that.
And I thought, wow, I am the right kind of hungry now after reading your story, because it was so vivid, talking about your connection, your family connection to salmon, and then how you prepare it. Although I have to say that the hilarious part that you alluded to kind of teasingly about your grandmother and the dishwasher, I was telling a friend about that the other night.
It's a thing.
She cracked up and said, oh, yeah, I know people that have done that. So describe what that was.
Well, I don't want to encourage it, but because people are kindly listening into this morning, we can talk about it. but now, I haven't done it myself. And my Uncle Tommy, if he's listening, God bless him, he's known to kind of exaggerate these kind of things. But he said that Virginia, my grandmother, would wrap it in saran wrap, and then put it on the top rack on the sanitized cycle of the dishwasher. Comes out really, really, it's like, you know, kind of a sous vide sort of vibe, kind of really, really custardy, I hear, really custardy. The idea to me sounds pretty gnarly just because I think of all the things that I put in the dishwasher and the dishwashing soap and I don't know. But yeah, it's a thing. And maybe someone can call in and describe it more who's had it. Is it good? We don't know.
And also, was this an effort to cook a tremendous amount of it. I mean, I have this image in my head of an empty dishwasher with like two fillets in there. And I thought, really? But maybe it's cooking a large amount.
I don't know. You know, there were nine children. Yeah. However, I think it has more to do with like the texture. I think there are like different tastes when it comes to like how salmon should be, you know, and some people like it certain, you know, some people like it one way, some people like it another way. There's a whole pan fry crowd out there.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to the pan fry crowd. Yeah, I think it had more to do with texture. And also, like, I think that period of time, it was like the 70s. There was just an interest in different. It was right before the microwave boom of hit. So there was just an interest in doing cooking things differently.
In your dishwasher. Of
yeah.
course. makes perfect sense to
me. I think there was like an appliance like sort of like thing going. I don't know. You know, hopefully Tommy's listening.
Maybe trying
he can
to be
call
modern.
In.
You know,
yeah. But it sounded so gross that I like really didn't want to go into detail in my essay out of fear that someone would try it on perfectly innocent salmon.
Well, if you are just joining us, we are talking about salmon today. My guest in the studio is Julia O'Malley. We're hoping to be joined by Willie Hensley soon. They are contributing writers to this collection of stories called Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. We're going to talk a little more about that in a moment. But first, let's go to the phones. We have a caller. Jed is on the line from Anchorage. Hi, Jed.
Hello. I've fished from Tree Point. I've fished Kodiak. I've fished Chignik, Prince William Sound, and I finished Bristol Bay. And many people don't realize the importance of salmon to Alaska, but it's Mother Earth, Father Sky, and the salmon people.
Absolutely.
And I want to tell you about the last time I went fishing. It was a little pocket seiner out of Larsen Bay. And we deck loaded the boat. And it was the best experience I ever had in my whole life, catching all those salmon. Until you do it, you don't know how it feels.
Wow, this really is a deeply felt story for you, Jed.
Salmon have kept the people of Alaska alive for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and we must protect them because they'll keep us alive for thousands and thousands and thousands more.
Well, you'll get no argument from us about that. Thank you so much for your clearly deeply held passion for salmon. And that's really the essence of what we're talking about today, is the passion that people have for a fish, which, you know, if you just think about it from a fish, that perspective seems a little bit bizarre. But as Jed so, you know, deeply, you could tell he was feeling very emotional about it and relayed what a lot of people also feel, which is salmon have sustained people for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
Not just in Alaska, but in many places of the world. And unfortunately, a lot of those runs are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Alaska still can celebrate the beautiful salmon that we have here. Julia, I wanted to ask you how you got connected to this project. How did it start for you?
I was part of a second group of people who contributed. I think there were about 14 or 15 essays that were published in the Dispatch. And then they did a book proposal. Nancy Lord was organizing it. And so she just approached me in that once the book proposal had been accepted to contribute an essay. At that point, I wanted, you know, that listening to that caller made me think of this part of an essay by Dan O'Neill. And I wanted to just read it because it's so beautiful.
Please do.
I have fished on commercial gillnetters a few times as a totally green deckhand on boats of pals who let me come along when I begged. God, I love it. Mostly just being there. Whenever I rhapsodize about it, people seem puzzled. My wife explains, for him, it is mostly about eating. And that is true. The high life for me is frying up a fresh sea-run dolly or whatever comes aboard. Garlic, butter, onions, the smell of it, a bottle of wine pulled from a cool spot in the hold. The breeze is streaming through open windows, the boat rolling, the volcanoes rolling too, into view, out of view, changing places with a flashing blue water. It's just really hard to separate, I think. Well, actually, backing up, I think that Alaska, you know, when we try to define what Alaska's cuisine is, we talk about it kind of in a culinary sense. It always starts with salmon. And it's really hard, I think, to separate the food and our relationship with the food from our relationship to the place. The abundance of salmon here is different than anywhere else, and it's part of our relationship to this big, wild place, I think. And fishing is one of the ways that many, many people have come into contact with the larger wild environment. So it has a spiritual component as well as a culinary component, I think.
It really does. It's kind of amazing how it incorporates all of those things, physical sustenance and also spiritual sustenance, and the bonds that, you know, bring families together and communities together.
Absolutely.
Are definitely very strong. We are talking about salmon and the book Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. Julia O'Malley is in the studio with me. She's one of the contributing writers. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you have like a big fish that got away story or other stories about why... Do you think that the celebrity status that salmon has is proper, or is there another Alaska icon that you think deserves top billing in Alaska? You can give us a call. Also at Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go back to the phones, Julia. Rick is in Soldotna and joins us now. Hi, Rick.
Hi there.
You have a salmon story for us?
Oh, I've got lots, but I'll tell you one, maybe or two.
All right.
I've commercial fished salmon not too many long years ago. And first thing I want to say is that you have to have a lot of respect for the salmon fishermen because it can be extremely dangerous. I've been in waters where the tide was so fast that the line itself was like a steel cable. When I try to cut it, we usually carry small little knives, kitchen knives, and when I tried to cut the cable, it snapped the blade, broke the blade. And you have to stand back. You know, even when the net is running in a tide, we let it loose and go and chase it because it's so, the waters are really dangerous. You know, even then, that net is stiff like steel cable. And it can be very dangerous out there for the fishermen.
Mm.
But the thing that brought me to Alaska 37 years ago, I was visiting Alaska with my sister, and we were driving over the bridge in Soldotna, and I saw this kid, young boy, haul this huge fish out of the river, almost as big as him. And I tell you, I was so astounded. And I mean, where I come from, I used to go diving all the time, you know, spearfishing.
Mm.
And if you had a fish that size, man, it would just blow your mind, you know. It was just awesome.
Where is that, Rick? Where is it that you came from and ended up in Soldotna?
From Hawaii.
From Hawaii, okay.
Yeah.
So salmon convinced you to stay.
Well, salmon sure did. Salmon and halibut, both of them. You know, I think they're both icons of Alaska.
Absolutely.
They truly are.
Yeah, I want to say one last thing.
Sure.
I've canned a lot of salmon every year, well, for the past few years now. But I've got salmon that I canned back in early 90s, and I'm still eating them out of the canning jar. I just put ketchup in them, and I eat it.
I don't know, man. That's some old salmon.
Yeah,
I know, but
be careful.
I read an article. It says that if it's canned, whether in a can or what, and if there's no damage to them, the food is still good.
All right. Well,
I wouldn't recommend it, but, you know, if you have to.
Yeah, if you have to.
If you have to, I guess. Yeah, but do be careful. And thanks so much, yeah. Rick, for that great story. I love that image of a kid hauling in a fish almost bigger than himself. That kind of reminds me. Thanks for the call, Rick. Julia, that sort of reminds me of something that you wrote in your essay about fishing. And you were really honest in saying that you really don't like to catch them.
Well,
that you caught one and it was kind of over for you, which that was so interesting for me to read. I mean, it was interesting because I have always felt like, and I believe this, that if once somebody catches a fish, they're just like, you know, sounds like a pun, but they're hooked for life fishing.
Not only does it sound
so
like a pun.
I love to take kids fishing because once they start catching fish, then they're fishermen forever.
I don't know what it is. Like, I've been surrounded by people who are so hardcore. It's like, I don't have the depth of drive. It has something to do with like getting up at 3 a.m. and like driving to Valdez and I don't know. So I just haven't ever really, I don't mind fishing off a boat like in Homer on normal hours, but the hardcoreness, and we're Copper River, our family's a Copper River sort of fishing family. And so there's a lot of like no sleeping and I don't know. I just haven't really found my method. I might be a little bit of a princess about it. I don't know.
I wasn't suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know. But I mean, I like being in the boat. I like, you know, the being outside. I've done some Kasilof fishing. It's really fun, but I didn't catch anything. I also don't have good fish luck. Like, and especially like my Aunt Barbara, who at this moment is fishing with my cousin Sarah right now. She doesn't like people who are unlucky in her boat. You know, there's a lot of things
you'll get
she does.
Out, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. You don't eat. You eat. I remember being a kid, I'd go fishing with her. She wouldn't eat anything. It's just not lucky. Except for sweet tarts. And that was back when she smoked. So it would just be like cigarettes and sweet tarts. But she's an amazing fisher person. In fact, I have already had king salmon this season because she caught some. So I don't know. So maybe I'm just like, you know, it'd be like if you had all Olympians in your family and then you know, Olympic golfers or something. And like then you like wanted to golf, you would feel like you couldn't do it. I mean, my wife
so the bar
is really hardcore.
The bar is set too high.
Yeah, they're hardcore. Just people are super hardcore. So
that's a lot of stress.
But I'm really, yeah. And I'm really good at like once it comes home, I can like package all that stuff up. I'm like really efficient about it. I've got like a system. I'm a really good cook, you know, so I fill in the other parts.
Those are really important things.
Yeah.
And so I think that's interesting, though, because that's part of the whole cycle of it, too, is that everybody has their duties and their jobs.
Yes.
Some people are the ones in the boat actually catching the fish, and others are home cutting and jarring or smoking, drying, whatever mm-hmm. method people use. But it does take a lot of people to make all this happen so that you have enough protein put up for winter. You mentioned the Copper River, and we had an email from someone who says, I am really tired of Copper River salmon being touted as the first commercially harvested salmon of the year available for market. Hook and line caught wild king salmon are commercially caught by trollers in Southeast nearly year round, and those fish are just as good, if not better, than Copper River kings.
And we should put something out there. You know, people need to talk about, I would like to hear people's favorite kind of fish. I think for me, I like the Copper River, but it's almost an emotional thing. Mm. You know, I will say you get a piece of king salmon, you're not going to be complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, right. It's like, it's pretty good. It's almost two different things. It's almost like two different meats completely, if we're going to really talk about it.
Yeah.
But I would like to hear an advocate for silvers. if I could, you know, there are people who are silver salmon eaters. It's nice to eat silver at the time of year that you eat it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's the little secret, which we all have, which is that last fillet or two that's still in the freezer right now. It's okay to feel guilty when you eat fresh salmon. We eat fresh salmon, even though we might have an old salmon back there. We should feel some guilt about that, but
I
don't know.
Smoker. Just put it on the smoker. That's
I know you're pro smoking.
I am.
I feel that smoking can go overboard, like too much smoked fish.
Well, especially the fish that are in the freezer. I mean, when you got the fresh fish, of course you're going to eat that. But if you've got some that have been in the freezer for a while, put them on the smoker. They're really good.
There you go.
Here is someone writing in to tell us about the dishwasher salmon method.
All right. Let's have it. I'm All excited.
Right. Jocelyn Payne says, I once served dishwasher salmon for a large concert association after performance party just to impress the visiting dancers. 10 volunteers each wrapped their seasoned whole salmon in 3 layers of aluminum foil.
Okay, foil.
Put them on the top rack of their dishwashers. The recipe called for 2 to 3 soap-free regular cycles, depending on the size of the fish. Steaming water produced the most tender, moist, yet firm salmon I've ever had. I still sometimes cook salmon this way. The New Yorkers were blown away and we had no leftovers. That's a pretty ringing endorsement of dishwasher salmon, I would say.
I am so happy to have that detail provided to me. It really fills it in.
And we also have a caller on the line about washing machine salmon.
What? Okay, hello, let's have it.
Hello, Greg in Petersburg.
The best way to do that, salmon in the washing machine, it's got to be vacuum sealed.
No, wait, dishwasher or washing machine? Like,
yeah, in your dishwasher.
Okay. Dishwasher, okay.
But it's got to be vacuum sealed. And about, you know, I'll take about 10 fillets a year, and I'll just take a third of a cup of marinade and freeze it, right, put it right in the back before I vacuum seal it. And then vacuum seal it, and it's in the freezer. That way, once in a while, I can take it out and just fire it in the wash machine.
So do you put it on a certain cycle, and how many cycles?
Two cycles, and it just comes out poached to perfection.
What's your marinade?
It varies. I got stuff called sake to me. It's sake based marinade. Really good.
You buy it commercially, sake to me, or you make it?
Yeah, I can. The guy that owns the company, he sport fishes at a lodge in Point Baker every summer, so that's the only place I've ever been able to find it. So I get on there and buy a little bit.
Ooh, sake marinade.
That sounds really good.
Yeah, I'm going to Google that.
Well, thanks, Greg. We're glad to know that this is a valid method for cooking salmon. We've heard it now from several people. I guess your grandmother knew what she was doing,
I guess,
Julia,
I'm sad about that I dismissed it. It's hard for me to wrap my... When I look in my dishwasher, it's like hard for me to wrap my mind around it. But now that I'm hearing the like vacuum sealed, I might have to try it after all this.
Well, and I'll tell you, I've never tried cooking salmon in the dishwasher, but many years ago when I made pickles in great volume, I would put all of the small cucumbers in the regular washing machine, and just put cold water in there and run the agitate cycle for a little bit, because they would just knock all the bumps off and you'd have nice clean cucumbers to put in jars to, and all the little black things, you know, the little bumps that are on the pickles would all be off.
I think there's some repurposing of a large household appliances that, you know, there's a way to
resourceful Americans
clean peas in volume or get the feathers off of chickens. I've heard.
Oh, no.
I don't know. It's a modification. Maybe someone's familiar.
Oh gosh. Okay, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Danny is in Fairbanks. Hi, Danny.
Hi. Yeah, I feel the same way the first caller called. Salmon is everything. If I don't go to Chitna, I have withdrawals. My year is not complete till the next time I go. So, yeah, I feel the same way. I can't wait to try out dishwasher salmon either. You learn something every day, and especially with salmon. You learn with salmon every day, that's for sure.
How do you usually cook your salmon?
Oh, I like it always poached, fried. Of course, I like to smoke it and dips, and I had a salmon sandwich yesterday, and so I like it on sandwiches, of course. And it'd be tough to live without. Yep. So I appreciate the call.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Thanks for calling in. And, you know, this is kind of fascinating how we know that salmon has a big spot in Alaskans' hearts. But, wow, people really are expressing a deep connection and a lot of emotion today. And that's fantastic that they're calling in and sharing that with us, their strong feelings about salmon.
It's amazing that a food can really symbolize your connection to culture and place in such a powerful way. And, you know, I was thinking about on the drive over here, I was thinking about hunger and food and our relationship to food in Alaska. And I think that Alaska is such a seasonal place that eating here is so seasonal. And you become hungry for certain things at certain times of year. And this is the time of year that I become, because I eat salmon all winter, and there becomes a time when I'm just like not as into it. Mm. Sorry, defrosting that salmon and making it, you know, in the oven or whatever in February or March is like just not the same. And I think, I'm not really into salmon. Maybe I'm like getting over salmon. I'm not that into it. And then, the light starts coming back and I get hungry for it. And I have to eat it in the springtime to really, it feels then officially like the season has changed. Mm. And we earn our summer season because we go through the winter season.
Right.
And so it's like running a marathon and getting to that last mile, you know. Salmon is like what that tastes like here. Anyway, I wonder what people think about, you know, if your hunger for salmon changes depending on the time of year.
I like that idea of kind of kicking off, you know, the spring season by sort of relaunching your love affair with salmon. That's a great way to think about it and to consider it. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Joe is in Wasilla. Hi, Joe.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This wasn't about salmon. It was about rainbow trout, a little bit change there, but I know how Alaskans are. They're romantic about fishing. Plus, you know, it is a, they like to impress people, you know. That's kind of the way Alaskans are, you know, with their fish. And when my wife and I first got married, we were on our honeymoon. We took the canoe. And we were in the middle of the lake. It was a sunny, nice day, and kicking back. And there were some older people fishing on the shore. And I wasn't catching anything, and all of a sudden I caught just a wham, just a big old solid hit, and then the fish came straight up, and it jumped right beside the boat, and it was, I would say 24, 26-inch rainbow, and it went straight down and snapped the line, and then no more fish, and my new wife was definitely not impressed. And so then we rowed to shore, and not even a one fish. And here my wife was not impressed with my fishing abilities. And then the retired people on the shore, of course, they had to add to it. Said, "Oh, here we have more fish than we can keep. Why don't you take some of our fish?"
Ouch!
And so yeah, just rub salt in the wound. And so, you know, here I am packing these fish back that were given to me, and the big one got away. But since then, that's been 25 years ago, and since then, my wife is I am an avid fisherman, and she's a little more impressed with my fishing than she was the first time we went fishing together.
All right. Well, yay, Joe. I'm glad that you were able to redeem yourself as in your wife's eyes as a fisherman of note. So thanks for that great story. And we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more stories of salmon.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing the iconic fish of Alaska, salmon, and hearing lots of great stories and some really emotional stories about people's connection to this iconic fish. Erin Harrington is on the line with us now, and she is part of the Salmon Project. Hi, Erin.
Hey, how's it going? Good morning, Lori.
Good morning. Thanks for being on. You know, Erin, I wanted to, I'm glad that you called in, and it'd be great to learn a little more about the Salmon Project, this book, this great collection of stories that Julia's a part of and so many other Alaskans are part of, is just a really amazing body of work, all these wonderful family stories and remembrances and commercial fishing stories and personal fishing stories. What's the whole idea behind this project?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So the Salmon Project is all about Alaskans and the way that we are connected to salmon. It's about 3.5 years old, and it launched off from a set of questions around really how connected were Alaskans to salmon. Like, we had this sense, there was an early group of people that were working on this concept. They had this sense that these connections were deep and wide and profound and were something really uniquely, powerfully Alaskan. But at the time, and this was in 2012, a lot of the conversations that were happening around salmon around the state were around issues that were dividing people, allocation battles, you know, the perennial allocation battles. There was all of the conversation and decision-making that was going around the Pebble Project. And while all of those are important conversations, they really sold short sort of the larger, grander story of Alaskans and these powerful bonds that they have in almost every community across the state. And so the work that we do has been working to tease that out and try to understand what that means, what it means to have a state full of people who are still deeply, profoundly connected to seasonal rhythms, that it's so much part of their families and their relationships, as you and Julia have been talking about and as some of the callers have talked about. And so this book for us is a continued exploration of that, of those questions and that idea, with the assistance of 50 really talented writers, 20 plus very well-known Alaska authors, and then another 30 kind of every man, every woman Alaskans who had shared their stories and their concepts of what salmon meant in their lives with us at the Salmon Project over the last handful of years that we've been doing our work. So it's really, to me, it's a marvelous display of what this means for Alaskans of all stripes, from all backgrounds, from all corners of our state, having this just overwhelmingly powerful continued connection with this incredible living resource.
It really is amazing, the connections, and we're hearing so much about that today on the program. Does the book is out now and people can buy it. It's in some bookstores.
And it's at Barnes & Noble.
And you can certainly get it online. Is there, Erin, what is going on with the money that gets made from the book? What happens with that?
So the book was published by the University of Alaska Press. So we with the help of Nancy Lord, the former state writer laureate, who is the editor of this book, we helped pull together this idea and we pitched it to the University of Alaska Press. So it's actually really, they're the publisher. It's their book. There is for sales that are, you know, sales of the book, there is a small percentage of that would return to the Salmon Project to support future work. But mostly because it's a university press, they're not huge profit-making machines. So really, we're just excited to be able to offer the book and hope that the sales will cover the cost of its production.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
That's the idea.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's got a great cover, wonderful photos in there,
Clark
full color.
James Mishler contributed the photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good
yeah.
stuff. Well, thanks, Erin, for calling in. Is there anything else that you really wanted to make sure that we understood about this project?
No, I don't think so. I'm happy to just be able to be here and tell you a little bit more about it. I'm really honored that all of these incredible authors took the time to sit back and reflect on the ways that salmon were part of their lives and then part of a more universal Alaska story. You would think it would be hard to get 20 very busy, talented writers to contribute stories, but I think that the moment you ask people to talk about salmon, they really are all in. So it's just been an honor, and I'm excited for Alaskans to get their hands on this book in their local bookstores and online if they must.
Absolutely. We'll link to it on our website, alaskapublic.org. So if you're looking for that, you'll be able to find it on the website. We are, thanks so much, Erin, for calling in, and we're going to go back to the phones, and I also wanted to mention that we have no less than three, four, or five, I've kind of lost count here, emails on dishwasher sale.
It's a thing. We have tapped a vein.
We have,
a
yes.
dishwasher salmon vein out there.
Here's one story from Shirley, who says that it's my understanding that it was Anne Stevens, Ted Stevens' first wife, who originated the method of cooking a salmon in the dishwasher. She was putting on a dinner party in Washington, D.C., and by some fluke ran out of oven space. She came up with the idea of wrapping the salmon in aluminum foil and placing it on the lower level of the dishwasher. I don't know whether she turned the machine onto the drying cycle or ran it through the whole cycle and poached the fish. And there's other people who have...
I love that.
Have sent in four or five more stories about salmon cooked in the dishwasher.
I think I'm going to have to blog about it.
It's such a fantastic fish that even cooking it in the dishwasher, it comes out really well. One of the things that we haven't talked about yet, but I wanted to get to, was the issue of how salmon have disappeared from so many places. And we're awfully fortunate here in Alaska that we still have healthy runs. Sometimes we have closures and there's trouble with some runs, but we have a lot of salmon still in Alaska. And the editor of Made of Salmon, Nancy Lord, writes about the early 1900s when commercial fish traps and canneries devastated a lot of the salmon runs, and it became a fight during statehood. Then there was limited entry fisheries, the Fisheries Conservation and Management Act, which became known as Magnuson-Stevens in the 70s. Hatcheries started in the 70s. On the line, we know that Atlantic salmon have been in trouble for a long time on the East Coast. There were big salmon runs. They're not there anymore. Connie is on the line in Anchorage and has some comments about Atlantic salmon. Hi, Connie.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I actually don't have any comments about it. I just have a silly, weird story. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised here, but I took about an 8-year hiatus to move to Washington, D.C. and go to college and work. And while I was there, my mom took me to a very prominent seafood restaurant. And while we were there, I ordered Atlantic salmon for the first time in my life. And I remember getting it and tasting it, and my mom kind of gave me this weird look knowing what was about to happen, and I just didn't like it the moment I tasted it. I had a look of absolute disgust on my face, I'm sure, because the waiter came over asked what was wrong, and my mom says, oh, she was born and raised in Alaska. And before I even said anything else, he picked up the fillet of salmon and took it away and asked what else he could get me.
Oh, my gosh.
There was no comparison to Atlantic and Alaskan salmon.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, well, that's a great story about the distinctions between the two. I was hoping to, thanks for that call, Connie. I was hoping to talk a little bit about the management. And Julia, I know that fisheries management is probably not an area that you're a professional in, but kind of what's your sense from talking to other Alaskans and family folks about how Alaska does in managing our fisheries?
Man, it's pretty controversial. I spent some time in Tanana last summer where, you know, they were not able to get the fish that they were used to.
Right.
And it made a big, it was, as you can imagine, it was a huge deal there. And it really just like cuts your heart out because just as we've discussed, that seasonal eating, the putting away fish, part of the culture there. So they were making do with other types of fish. They couldn't get kings as they were used to. But man, it's just hard. I think we all want the runs to stay healthy, but mm-hmm. it's really hard to give up the fish and controversial also. And, you know, people have been fishing this fish before there was any management. There are, you know, and they have, you know, in native communities, they have a much longer sense of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, you know, and it can just be really controversial to shut down a fishery when people see those cycles in a different way with a broader eye. So, you know, it's just it's a complicated thing. I'm really happy that our runs are healthy. I know our oceans are not healthy right now. You know, we're about 5 degrees above normal ocean temperature out there. There's been a massive bloom of toxic algae. So I'm really hoping that, you know, our salmon runs survive that. Because, you know, we did see all of the dead seabirds on the coast mm-hmm. and things are really, and we've got all the hauled out walrus right now up near Point Hayden. So, I mean, we know that our oceans are not healthy mm-hmm. as they have been. So, and salmon is, when salmon go, that's going to be, it'll be pretty hard on us.
The connection that you alluded to about Alaska Native people and their long history of connection to salmon. Years ago, during the fish wars in Wisconsin over that iconic fish in that part of the country, which is walleye, a white-fleshed fish, and it's very prized by the Ojibwe people that are there. And so the fish wars were at a time when tribes were getting their rights reaffirmed, their longtime treaty rights to spear off reservation. And a good friend of mine, an Ojibwe friend of mine, described the change that happened in history by saying, generations ago, we had time for songs, writing songs and making art and spending more time teaching our children things they needed to know, because when we needed food, we just reached into the water and picked up what we needed or went into the woods and got what we needed. He said when things really started to change was when people started having the ability to lock up the food supply. And that really stuck with me, that distinction. I hadn't thought about that. Having been raised in an era when fishing and hunting regulations were in place. And so that seemed normal to me. I hadn't thought about a time before that when people just harvested what they needed when they needed it and how different that was. And that's really stuck with me, that big distinction and how that really changes a culture.
Well, and, you know, the economics of village life are absolutely pinned on the availability of subsistence foods.
Yes.
So when there's a decision made that locks up a component of that subsistence, you know, menu, it has an economic impact. We cannot expect people living this far from the road system to buy all their food in the store. Also, when the economy is not, you know, the village economy is not really a cash economy. So it's very complex, and I do not envy the people who are put in the position of making decisions about, you know, all of the management of the fish.
One of the writers in this book made of salmon, Hank Lettner wrote about a day fishing with his family. And when they had all their fish, they went for a hike. They cleaned their fish, packed them in a cooler, went for a nice family hike, came back. They motored back into inside waters and then stopped for a shore lunch and had fresh fish. And when they got back, he was talking about giving some fillets to the neighbor who came and helped them haul the coolers up and other neighbors as they were going home. And he was talking about how if we had gone to the store and bought $1,000 worth of groceries, we wouldn't have been stopping along the way home to hand out, you know, part of that catch that we had. And so it was a really interesting way to illustrate that culture of sharing that also goes along with salmon and how people will willingly share that catch and are kind of giddy and excited to do so. You know, when you catch fish, it's like, yay, I feel proud that I can share this with someone now.
It's manners, too. It's manners in our state. Like 2 years ago this time, we had a baby, and so we lent out our nets. And it was interesting. We lent out our nets, some of them to people who are Alaskans, so they knew when they brought back the nets, they should bring fish. But some people, they were new. They were a little stingy on the fish, you know.
And it's bad form.
It's bad form. It's Alaskan manners to share, because yes. Also it's so much better. It's so good when it's fresh.
Yes,
that you would share it rather than hoard it. Don't hoard the fish, man.
No, don't hoard the fish.
It's bad karma.
Don't bring back. My grandmother always taught me that if someone gives you food in a nice dish, and when you return that dish, you should return some food too.
Oh,
send food
back.
That's
good manners. That's pretty good manners.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Thomas is in Anchorage. Hi, Thomas.
Well, I survived Chitna. I was new here, and just like first thing I did when I got here was I walked out on the flats. Got in trouble for that. I mean, we got to Chitna, and I've never seen concrete move so fast. I went over to dip my toes in the water, and everybody's screaming at me to get away, get away, get away, because the first step was a cliff. That's my tip. I survived.
It's dangerous out there. It's real. That's, yeah.
But as far as the trip to Valdez, oh, it is so beautiful. And the cool thing is when you get to Valdez, with all the fumes from the boats and stuff, you can refill your tank and head right back out. And oh, it's beautiful. And it's worth it.
All right.
So, well, yeah, I recommend stay off the flats and don't dip your toes and do go to Valdez.
All right. Well, thanks for wrapping that all up succinctly there, Thomas. That good advice about how to stay safe but still get some fish. That's great. Let's talk to Ken in Valdez. Hi, Ken.
Hey, what's going on? You guys are really the talk of the town here. Everybody's excited about fish this year. has anybody ever heard of salmon is salmon, right? Well, unless you're talking about Alaskan salmon. I mean, there is also Chilean salmon, right?
Oh, there is that.
Atlantic salmon.
Yes.
And there's all these salmons that are around, and unfortunately, if you go to scambusters.org, salmon.html, you can see how there's a scam on salmon in the world. And they all say Alaskan salmon, but it ain't coming across in the restaurants as real Alaskan salmon. And 870 million pounds a year are being eaten of fish, of salmon. And obviously, 43% of that is not Alaskan. So there's a real, you know, it's the hour of lying. If you've noticed, there's lying everywhere. Everybody lies and doesn't tell the truth. But there are some truths if you dig them up. And this is one I just dug up yesterday. Happened to be driving into town, heard you ladies sharing about fish and wondered why there weren't any men there sharing, but that's okay.
We invited one. He didn't show up.
Hey, I had to throw that in.
Well, we're glad you called
anyway,
in then, Ken, to add the
male
voices.
One more. Can I tell a real quick story about my salmon experience?
Yes.
Absolutely.
We moved to Alaska in the 70s and came and were told about Chitna, which was the big thing for Fairbanks folks, which I lived there 12 years. And made a big trip with about 8 guys and went down to go get some salmon with a dip net. And 8 of us out there fishing all night, we got one fish. And it was work. I'm talking moving that. And the fish weren't moving, obviously, or we were doing something wrong. But anyway, I decided to take a break towards morning. 7-hour drive down there, 7-hour back. And we ran up to the area where the fish wheels were. And I go, wow, that's really cool. That's the way to catch fish. Why are we doing this? So I went and talked to a guy that had a fish wheel. He says, oh, you have to get in line, and then they have a lottery, and then that you have to be in Alaska for 10 years. He gave me this big, long line of how you get to be a fish wheel person. Well, the next year after that story, I said, I guess I'll never do that. I went down to the fish and game, and they told me all you got to do is sign up and be a certain amount of finances that you make a year or not, and you can have a fish wheel. Well, wow, I got me a fish wheel, and next year I had three families living off of fish. And then I moved to Valdez, where I found the sweetness of people call you up and say, hey, you want some fish? Sure. So I go nice. Down to get a few fish, and somebody comes up and says, how much you want? I says, I'll take what you got. They had three bags of silvers with about 30 fish in each one, and they said, we have a lot. You can have it all, or you can have whatever you want. And to me, I found the place where fish rule. But the sad thing of my story is that the scambusters.org/salmon HTML tells us of many people that are getting not Alaskan salmon.
Mm.
If anybody wants to read that, they can check it out. It's very sad. And we are a spoiled people. I heard the girl there talking about flipping her frozen salmon and getting tired of it. There's people in Oregon. I was down there for 3 years, and they want salmon. But they get pink salmon, and they jump up and down. In Valdez, we don't touch pink salmon.
Uh-oh, he's a salmon snob.
We're all salmon snobs.
Well, good show. Appreciate it. And make sure everybody knows that we are an elect up here getting special fish that only
yes,
a few chosen, frozen people get to get.
Thank you, Ken, for the call. We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, more stories of salmon as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing a collection of stories by Alaska writers. The book is called Made of Salmon, Alaska Stories from the Salmon Project. It's edited by Nancy Lord, who is a former writer laureate for Alaska. And one of the contributing writers is Julia O'Malley. She's in the studio with me. We also have some more callers on the line. But one thing I wanted to ask you quickly, Julia, before we go back to a couple of calls, was when you think about the various connections Alaskans have. My family, for example, my sister came up here decades ago to work in canneries in Petersburg when she was living in Oregon. And my brother just retired from decades of commercial fishing. He built two homes and put two sons through college, being out there toiling away in the ocean, catching salmon. Is there anything else that you can think of, Julia, that so affects so many lives here? I mean, the oil industry is big in Alaska. There's no question about that. But salmon, more so?
It's just different. You know, it has to do with the identity of a place in a way that's maybe different than the oil industry. I think it's my impression, you know, the oil industry brought a lot of people from other states with a lot of oil to Alaska. So, you know, people are coming from Texas or Oklahoma or that
sure.
kind of thing. Salmon, I think, has brought like a more kind of a more diverse group of people up here for various reasons. One of the things that was interesting when I used to work for the Daily News, I had done some reporting about Sudanese refugees. But it was amazing the number of people who had come from Sudan who were now working in fishing.
Mm.
And if you look at the census map of the state, you can see some of the most diverse you know, districts in the state, which is a really diverse state, are out in the Aleutians, and it would be like the Dutch Harbor area, because so many immigrants from so many places have been attracted to Alaska, to the fishing industry.
Yeah.
So that's sort of just one of those more interesting things. It really lends culture to the state in a way that is just sort of fun and interesting. It has changed over time.
Absolutely. That's a great illustration of how deep that connection is, both in state with people who've lived here for generations and also people who come here and stay because of that iconic fish. Dennis is in Clam Gulch. We're going back to the phones. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Laurie. How are you today?
I am well. Did you have a quick story for us? We only have a couple minutes left.
I do. I've got a story. First of all, I want to say about salmon and oil. I've never been able to put my lips around oil. it's food.
Yes, good point.
One of the things I haven't heard you speak about, and it's one of my favorite ways. People are always asking me. I fish for a living, and people are always asking me, well, what's your favorite fish? Which one do you like to eat best? And I just got one pat answer: fresh. And my favorite way to cook it, and I don't do it very often because it's a special treat, is I deep fry it. And I like deep fried salmon. It's wonderful.
Really?
Oh, tell us more.
Well, I cook it just the way I got onto it was, I love to eat halibut, and deep fried halibut is a treat that everybody loves. And one time I was kind of low on halibut and had too many people, and not enough halibut, and I just had a fresh salmon, so I just cut it up into chunks and did the same thing I do with halibut.
Hmm. Beer batter?
I can't eat wheat. I can't eat wheat, so I use a gluten-free pancake flour and a gluten-free beer.
All right.
Just roll it in the flour and dip it, in the hot grease and cook it just like halibut. And I think it's better than halibut, personally. That's because I like salmon.
Wow. Well,
I'm getting hungry.
It's a good thing we're almost done for the day. We're going to have to go out and get some salmon.
Salmon, I know. I need some salmon stat.
and if you want to learn about how badly we as a species have treated this wonderful species of fish all across the world, the man by the name of Montgomery wrote a book called Salmon, King of Fish. And it documents how we have failed to take care of these species all across the world. And I just hope Alaska can learn not to do that.
And I would mention, and thank you for bringing that up, that I think Made of Salmon was actually inspired by that book. I think all of the contributors were sent a copy of that book to help us get thinking as we sort of approached our essay. So thank you for mentioning that. I think that larger, broader question is sort of how are we doing now and what's the future of fish in our state is really a theme in Made of Salmon as well.
All right. Well, it's amazing how quickly an hour goes by when you're having a great time and talking about salmon. We could fill another hour. And sorry to the callers who didn't get on, but thank you, Julia O'Malley, for being in the studio with me. Thanks for all
Thanks
the calls and emails.
Me.
And get out there, Alaskans, and get those salmon.
And put them in your dishwasher.
That's right. Thanks for listening to Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Commercial, sport, subsistence, personal use. Some hear these labels and think conflict. The Salmon Project sees connections. Join 10,000 Alaskans whose lives are connected by Alaska's salmon. Visit salmonlife.org to experience the stories. And find the Salmon Project on Facebook to join the community. Salmon Life, Salmon Love. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.